Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, March 4th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we had, earlier in the day, we had a great day in gold. It's still a good day. It's closing above the 1250, 1262. 1262 right now, down 260, but we did have a high of 1280.
Yep.
So we did have a strong day. Markets were both in positive and negative territory, off and on throughout the day. The paper markets, silver was up 28 at 1560. Platinum was up $30. Another big day for both the platinum and palladium. Platinum up $30 at 983. Palladium up 16 at 560. USDX today is trading down slightly, 0.28 at 97.33. And crude oil up 1.63 at 36.20. 36.20 for crude oil. And the paper markets today. Paper markets today, the Dow was up 63 points, 17,007. NASDAQ up 9 at 47.17. S&P also up 7 at 19.99. It's funny that they're all just hovering on those, you know, numbers. You know, Dow just a little over 17, NASDAQ just a little over 47, and the S&P just at 2,000. I follow the numbers, so when I see things that are just kind of odd and so forth, it bears me to mention them.
Mm-hmm.
The Dow, 10-year yield, 1.88%, up 0.05. Euro 110, higher by 0.50. European and Asian markets, London was up over 1%. Hong Kong was up a little over 1%. Japan and Germany were basically unchanged. Shanghai, after the tough week that started out, still at 28.74 overnight, just up .5%. The payroll numbers came out today, and of course they were greater than anticipated. Let me see if I can pull them up here. 200 and Where are my numbers? They disappeared, Al.
Somebody stole your numbers?
Somebody stole my numbers.
That's because you said you pay attention to numbers. Government doesn't want people paying attention to numbers, Melody.
It was, what, 242,000? Again, most of them were in, restaurant, low-paying jobs. And wages dropped a little bit, hours dropped a little bit. So, again, there were 16,000 jobs in manufacturing decline. So
we have a couple hundred thousand more jobs, but hours are declining and wages are declining.
That is correct.
Does that make sense?
Hmm.
You would at least think in a reasonable traditional economy that if we're going to create more jobs, that means there should be more demand for workers. It should mean that there are going to be more hours being worked. Should mean that the wages are going up. Increased demand, I'll translate into increased, not decreased, wages.
Depends on the jobs.
Numbers where the number of jobs are going up and the wages are going down and the hours are going down, that does not... There may be reason behind it, but it's not instantly obvious. Right? It could be that they've created couple hundred thousand more jobs, and each one of them pays 1 hour a day for a total of 5 hours a week. All right, we've got more jobs, and the hours really do go down. I can understand that. There's, this is conceivable, but just the same, you would think if there's more jobs, there's more demand for workers, the wages should be going up.
Well, I mean, we were looking at the occupations of restaurants and bartenders and not that there's anything wrong with those occupations, but they are all part-time, and they don't get paid very well. So, if there's more of those, it's going to average it down as far as overall. But it just shows, and you're right, it's not the strong economy that they make the 242,000 jobs sound like, because you're right, they should be higher, and it should be stronger, but... it isn't, and it's just another leaf in the breeze, Al.
It's another one of those things that makes you wonder if the numbers that are being reported actually reflect reality.
Well, they don't. And that's the whole point of bringing the numbers, is because a lot of people, if you hear these on mainstream media, they'll say, oh, wow, 242,000 jobs. Well, the economy must be doing great, but let's break it down. And by breaking it down, it shows that, no, the numbers aren't what they seem to be. And this is why. And that's why we do these numbers. And, when you look at, how the manufacturing jobs, continue to lose, and look at the type of jobs that are being created. These are not the type of jobs that is going to sustain in an economy that's based on 70% of consumer spending.
Yeah, that's just crazy. And the whole idea, the idea that we are even thinking that the economy is based 70% on consumer spending, all by itself has to be a dangerous premise. Right? We can't have an economy that's based on consumption. That sounds good and it's fun and the rest of that sort of thing, but reality is, we talked about it just a couple days ago, if you want a slice of the pie, somebody's got to actually make a pie. That means the first order of business, before we start slicing up the pie to see whether you get a big slice, a small slice, or no slice at all, somebody's got to make a pie. And that means you have to focus on production rather than consumption. Right? If all we're going to do is live in a car, all we need to do is find people to eat the pie. How stupid is that? Consumers, yay! We have more consumers. I mean, they have promoted the idea for, 15, 20 years that the fundamental business of the United States economy is to consume all the crapola that's manufactured and built by the rest of the world. We provide the market where they can sell their gigaws. And somehow it's all going to work out for the best. And it's an irrational idea. It's stupid. All right, we can't just keep buying everybody else's gewgaws and financing them with whatever accounting tricks the Federal Reserve and or the government can pull off. We've got to produce something. Before anybody gets a slice of the pie, somebody's got to produce a pie, and that means we've got to start focusing on the producers more so than the consumers. Everybody's a consumer. You know what you need to be a consumer, Melody? Not even a brainwave. Not even a brainwave. All you need is a pulse. All right? And we have people like that. They're in the hospital. They have had the misfortune of being comatose. There may not be any brainwaves worth mentioning, but as long as they have a pulse, they are a consumer. They consume food. They consume water. Somebody's got to use toilet paper or whatever on their behalf. That's all it takes to be a consumer. To be a producer requires brainwaves and a pulse and physical capacity and some sort of a determination to get out there and make something happen. All right? And these are the people that put food on the tables. And somebody's got to sit back and say, we want to take care of our producers. And we've got to show them at least a measure of respect, enough respect where we don't just sit back and say, well, you bake the pie and we'll eat it. No, if you're going to bake the pie, then what do we do? What do we have to do to get a chunk of the pie that you've built? It's not a question. We're not entitled to the pie. Right? If we didn't make the pie, we're not entitled to the pie. Government would have you believe otherwise. Government has misled, miseducated. And as a result, we're going to pay a terrible price when we reach a moment where people finally have to begin to respect producers more so than consumers. And it will be a painful education, and it will be learned by pain. All right, it'll be the sort of thing people sit back, oh my God, what have we done? It'll be shocking to people.
Well, here's a consumer. You have AMC Entertainment Holdings agreed to buy Carmike Cinemas. It's a cash deal that would make a Chinese-owned company, which is usually owned somehow, some way by the Chinese government, the largest movie theater operator in the U.S.
Right.
So
won't be long and you'll be able to get egg rolls instead of popcorn.
Makes AMC
change the movie culture.
It makes it the world's largest movie theater operator, AMC, not just the largest one in the U.S., but the largest one in the world. And China is just out there on a global shopping spree and helping these Chinese companies are helping the Chinese government with its agenda to enter the global market. To build the Chinese brand overseas, China's government-controlled brewer, China Resources Beer Holdings, they're acquiring Saab Millers. I'm not quite sure who makes a Saab, S-A-B Millers, 49% interest in a joint venture. I mean, the list just goes on and on. China's state-owned China National Chemical Corp. offered $43 billion, this is in February, to buy Swiss pesticide and seed company Syngenta, marking the first ambitious foreign takeover attempt by a Chinese company to date. So,
do you think it's a good thing, bad thing, it's a neutral thing for China to be buying American businesses, corporations, that sort of thing?
If these were businesses like, you know, GM going and buying something from, you know, someplace, but these are Chinese companies that are backed by Chinese government, by China's government. It is a communist government. So no,
so is ours.
I do not. Well, you can label it that and so forth. I get that. I know because I would have said the same thing. We're out buying is something different, but this is China. This is a communist. And no, I do not believe they should be buying American companies.
Well, what are they buying it with?
Stop.
They're buying it with the deficit that the trade deficit that we built up with them over the years.
Yeah.
Right?
The world's on the world's for sale.
We were purchasing their products and giving them these little pieces of paper, and they held on to the pieces of paper, and we said, yippee. But now the paper is coming back to us. And it's just like writing a check. We wrote a check to China to pay for their little problems, their products. And they just sat on the check, and it looks great on our bank balance. They're not cashing our checks. But now they are. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is something that should have been thought about when we started running deficits in international trade. It laid the foundation for ultimately selling a significant, an interesting number of American businesses to China. We took their products, now they're going to take our corporations. This is not unreasonable or unfair. And the only thing that's unfortunate is people didn't understand this was going to happen. And they said, yay, let's run the deficits. But when it talks about going after AMC, China is running the biggest theater chain in the United States and or the world. I wonder how smart that is. Because we live in a world where increasing numbers of people are staying home and watching movies on flat screen TV. And I've seen a couple of theaters close down here in Dallas. I'm not convinced that theaters are
necessarily
a good investment. I don't know if that's true or false.
Well, let me tell you something. I've seen some of these movie theaters that China is they're redoing, and they're putting recliners in there. They're really dressing them up to the point of just going in there, sitting uncomfortably in a pile of popcorn from the person that was there before. And they are changing it a little bit. And I do think, you know, sure, maybe 20 years from now or 30 years from now, who knows? But, I mean, you can argue both sides of the story.
I think the theater is, it'll always be there. But I think the numbers are going to go the way of the drive-in. You know, the drive-in was a big deal once upon a time. Now it's hard to find. I think something like that's going on with theaters. I know one theater that's been revised, and they've got, they're more comfortable for sure. It's more comfortable, and you can get food in there. You can order a dinner and have dinner there at the theater while you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
They'll call the waiter, and he'll take your order, and they will produce something for you, and blah, blah, blah. But I wonder if China's making an intelligent decision, at least relative to motion picture theaters here in the United States. And is China, maybe it's a good decision, maybe a smart decision, but I get the feeling they're trying to dump dollars. They're saying, we're not going to hang on to these dollars. Buy something. I don't care what it is. Somebody's got a barn full of hula hoops. Buy the hula hoops. Try to get a good deal on them, but get something tangible for the dollars. I kind of suspect that's the mentality behind China's determination to buy theaters, a theater chain here in the United States, and others, and other investments as well. They're trying to get out of those dollars. Can't get into gold and get into something else, you know, some kind of tangible investment. So we'll see. World will unfold, and
I don't know if this is important or not, but I don't know. When you think of a movie theater, it means that you have direct contact with the people. And, you know, you can have major influence.
I think
whether
one of the problems we have is trying to make sense of this. And there are a lot of things happening in the world right now where people are simply reaching out almost in desperation. They're confused, bamboozled. They don't know what to do. They're convinced they got to do something. And
to me, this is a part of the globalization. This is part of the New World Order. It just stinks.
Yeah.
You know, it just stinks. And it's not right. I don't agree with it. I don't think they should do it. And you can, it's another sign of the times. This is what people have to look forward to. And before they finish the nail in the coffin of the globalization of the New World Order, of bringing it all together, they're going to crash the world economies, what's left of them. And there's only one way that you're going to be able to prepare and to protect your hard-earned money. And it's not sitting there in your pension fund, your retirement account, your IRA. It's not putting it into long-term bonds. That won't help you. It's not putting it into, you know, I read something where somebody says, well, somebody's recommending put half of your money into money orders. Really? I mean,
people are making that recommendation because
are you kidding me?
No, they're not. And here's the
question. They should be.
Well, they should be, but what's the rationale behind it? Negative interest rates.
Good Lord.
If you have, let's suppose you've got $50,000 and you put it in a bank account and they impose negative interest rates on your bank account in this country. We don't have the negative interest rates to speak of yet in this country. They've been established in others, and some places, and some people are advocating we do negative interest rates here. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But if they have negative interest rates, if you take $50,000 and put it in the bank, under negative interest rate, next year you'll only have $48,000 or some number like that. But if you took that same $50,000 and you put it into money orders,
I get that, Al, but we don't have negative rates yet.
Well, I know we don't.
Okay, we don't have negative rates yet. Inflation is eating away more of that cash that's sitting there, whether it be in money orders or in the bank, than any negative rate that will be upon us.
Well, where the negative rates get us, the commercials will. So I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we do have a caller. We have Jim from West Virginia.
I knew Jim would call.
Yeah, I did too.
I see. I just baited my hook with some comments about productivity, and I knew Jim would rise to the bait.
What's up, Jim? What's up,
Jim?
You're right on
the spot. I have 2 points. One is, Melody said the communists, the Chinese was a communist government. Well, I was looking for my little juror's handbook. It's around here somewhere. It just jacked my wires. I couldn't find it. But the 10 planks, the Communist Manifesto, are already in place in America.
Mm-hmm. I get
everything,
that.
Huh?
I get that. I understand that.
Yeah. Everything
I don't think most people really do, though. We have a collectivist society right now. It's already here.
Oh, absolutely. Everything from a central bank to government ownership / control of production, all the regulatory agencies, obliteration of private property, government education, even inheritance tax, which is an invention by the communists.
Yep.
Now, the second point is...
Go ahead.
Okay,
Melody,
point
what were you going to say?
Nothing.
You weren't?
No.
Well, this is your chance. Jump in while Jim and I are...
I'm just waiting for one of you to talk.
All right.
I'll give it a shot. Okay, the other situation is this. There are three basic legs of a productive, free economy, and ours is less and less free. For instance, we have manufacturing, which is production, and I'm glad you're emphasizing it. The other is consumerism. The third leg is what I'll call the savings investment sector of this three-legged stool, the top of which is trade. If you produce way too much stuff and nobody's going to buy it, oops, that's where China is right now. They have produced and produced and produced, but they don't have a market. It's disappearing from them. The other situation is if you have a bunch of consumers more than production, imagine, if you will, there are X number of people, there's not enough food for them or clothing. That's very bad. Now, the one sector of this free economy, which people keep messing with, the government particularly, is a savings investment sector. It should be sacrosanct. There should be no inheritance tax. There should be no capital gains tax. That savings investment sector is the first thing they started wrecking in America. And as a result of that...
The savings is the difference between the productive leg of that you're describing and the consumer leg that you're describing. You got to have less consumption than you have production.
Bingo.
And the difference will create savings that can be invested to enhance future productivity. They take away the savings, you're not going to get the investment you need to enhance future productivity, and particularly when you allow consumers to outpace producers, the only way you can support that is by going deeper into debt.
Yep.
Got to borrow money because we're not producing. I need a new Cadillac, but we're not producing enough of them. Well, then let's borrow money.
Absolutely. And it's the savings investment sector, which is easiest to steal from. It's kind of hard for the government to walk in and steal a factory and say, okay, I'm going to get money out of this factory.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do them any good to steal consumers. But they love to steal and manipulate the savings investment sector, which is sacrosanct for a free economy. And the seat of this stool is free, unfettered, unregulated trade, so people can say, oh, we need to make more widgets, let's invest in widgets.
Now, when you say free, unfettered trade, do you mean global free trade or free trade within the nation?
Within the nation, within the economy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree.
But it used to be like if you had a business, you had tax breaks. They beat you to death. I want to give just one example of the insanity I have seen, and I could go on for hours. Okay, if you have a creek litter and like somebody, let's say the water gets high and some piece of trash washes in and catches on your part of the creek on some underbrush. That's a violation called creek littering, even though you didn't put the trash there. Ooh, they can fine you. If you're a private individual, it's $100, $150. I know of one business, because it was a business and they knew they could extract it out of them, $10,000. Now, this attack on productivity is by design. The globalists want the land. They want everything of value, and they're trashing our currency to do it. And we are on the verge of something happening. If nothing else, if Mr. Trump goes into place, I almost guarantee that they will crash the economy around his ankles. I do believe that that may be what the when they pull the plug. So, folks, get you some gold and silver while you can, because I experienced the deal back in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, where all of a sudden inventory disappeared from a local coin shop. Thank you, folks, for keeping this in balance, okay?
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate your call.
Production, consumption, savings, investment. God bless. Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Talk to you. There is a theory that I've been kicking around the back of my mind, even wrote an article about it, back around 2000. And I observed that if they were talking about a new world order and global government, the rest of that sort of thing, it was a fairly fresh idea back then. And it seemed to me that it couldn't be done the way things existed at the time. And the reason was this. Japan's business cycle is not synchronized with America's business cycle, which is not synchronized with the European business cycle or the Chinese or the Japanese or the Ugandan. And what that means is the business cycle runs as something like a sine wave, and for a while you go up the curve and you get to the top and the business, everything is hot, prices are high, and everybody's making money, and then it starts to decline and it falls down into an economic depression, and then after time it goes back up and we have another boom, we go into a boom cycle. And if you're going to have global government, you have to coordinate, synchronize all the business cycles in the world. And the reason was, we were at a time when this first turned up that Japan's business cycle was essentially opposite from our own. And so Japan wanted to, I'm trying to remember the article, I'm trying to remember the details, when Japan's economy is at the bottom and they need to pour money into the economy in order to stimulate it and make it come up again. At the same time that the American economy was at the top and we're trying to take money out of it, and the net result was that Japan is trying to increase the money supply in its country. I can't remember. I'm going to have to dig the article out. I apologize. It crossed my mind. But what it came down to is, The central banks of one country, they're trying to do one thing exactly at the same time the central banks of another country are doing the exact opposite. And the result is they tend to cancel each other out. They cause problems. What, in order to have a one-world government, in order to have New World Order, we've got to synchronize all the economies. And the only way you're going to synchronize all the economies is if you collapse all of them at the same time. You're going to have to go into a global depression where every economy is beat right down to the bottom. And then people in positions of power are going to have to say, well, like the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank or whoever, all right? They're going to have to say, well, we could provide X number of dollars to England. We could provide for economic stimulation and X number of dollars to the United States for economic stimulation, X number of dollars to China, Japan, and Uganda, and so on. And the whole world would get some sort of stimulus package at the same time. And they'd jump up a little bit. And they'd say, yay, hooray for the New World Order. Huh? But they can't do that. They can't control the whole world with money as long as there is a multitude of business cycles taking place at each of the nations. And the point behind this, although I didn't explain it very well, is that they have to synchronize, in my opinion, all of the world's economies, all of the national business cycles, all have to be down at the same time, up at the same time, down at the next, you know, together, up together. They have to be synchronized. Then they could control the whole world. And that means that they have an incentive in crashing the whole world at the same time. And again, it was an article that I wrote 16 years ago. And I can't remember the details precise. I'm going to have to dig it out.
What needs to be stabilized that allows governments to adjust their economies as needed is the currencies. I mean, this is where we've come, and this is why, you know, that's why they're all devaluing their currencies so they can try and get some sort of basically manipulating your currency is sort of like a stimulus to your economy. So, I mean, that would be the same thing as far as stabilizing these economies, these governments, is through their currencies.
Well, the thing about
that's where we're at.
Ultimately, if you want a new world order, you need a one world currency.
A one world currency, which I believe would be the trading currency. That's where it all comes around, and I believe personally that's where it's all built, and that is what they have come to the ability to control that until they go to the next step. But they do need to crash all of these economies. You know, they need to lower our standards of living than they have by exporting our jobs. And, you know, the next step is, yeah, they will crash all worldwide economies. I mean, it's not that far off. I mean, you can see it. It's there. No one is doing well. There isn't any country that's doing well.
Oh, Dubai is okay.
Really?
They
probably have a lot of money, but they have a lot of social programs they have to pay for it, and so forth, and they're not getting it with the low oil prices. I expect to see your oil prices start. I don't think you're going to see $20
oil. They've done all right up until recently.
In some areas, a lot of other places, you could say the same thing for China. But I think you are going to see your oil prices come back. I think, you know, I don't think you're going to see $20 oil.
It seems unlikely. It seems improbable.
I think you're going to see a trade right. 40 to 50, you know. But anyway, that's...
Here's some news from the Washington Examiner on a little different... FCC commissioner expect a broadband internet tax. Federal government cannot afford to subsidize the subsidies being poured into the telecommunications services unless it's planning to impose a new tax on broadband internet service. The agency, that's the FCC, is already spending money in anticipation of getting a greater amount of revenue from the Universal Service Fund. And what they read that as evidence that they figure that the taxes, the revenue is going to increase, but not until after the election. Then they'll impose a new tax on internet service. They point out government charges 18.2% on telephone service. And since they have reclassified broadband providers as public utilities, it happened last year, the FCC has been considering whether it should impose the same 18.2% fee on internet service. Decision was originally due in April 2015. It's been repeatedly delayed. But according to one of the speakers here, every one of your constituents, speaking to congressmen, senators, and whatever, is going to have to pay more for internet access. You think that's good, bad, or not much ado about nothing? Won't happen probably until about a year from now. What do you think, Melody?
I don't know. They're out there they can find a penny. They're going to look for it. And
I don't really object to it if it's true they're subsidizing the internet. I'm inclined to believe that everybody's got to pay his own way. I don't believe in government subsidies.
No.
And insofar, if they've been subsidizing the internet, 18% tax on current internet charges doesn't strike me as unreasonable or unbearable and the rest, that sort of thing. And truth of the matter is, if you're running an internet connection, you should be required to pay the full freight on it. As a general principle, I'd sit back and say, well, you know, I don't mind an extra tax on the internet per se. I don't like it, don't recommend it, don't want it. But on the other hand, it's fair that people using the internet pay for it without relying on government subsidies. And I'd like to eliminate the subsidies for internet and eliminate the subsidies for banks and eliminate the subsidies for aircraft manufacturers and everyone else and get rid of these subsidies and let the world function on its own ability in a free market. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis back here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody? You have a choice?
No, I don't.
Okay, how about this one? The AFP reports headline is Brazil on course for worst recession in century. Now, I don't know anything about Brazil's economic history, but it just strikes me as a little bit strange. It says Brazil's economy shrank by 3.8% in 2015, with the biggest contraction in 25 years set to push the Latin American giant into its worst recession for more than a century. That's interesting to me because apparently Brazil wasn't involved in the Great Depression of the 1930s. And that may be true. I don't know. But I was under the impression that when we went through the Great Depression of the 1930s, the whole world basically went through a depression at the same time. It wasn't just here in the United States. It was a global phenomenon, so far as I know. And I could be mistaken, but it's when they tell me that they're having the biggest contraction in 25 years, and it's only the worst recession, all right, in 25 years. They go on and they say the worst recession in more than a century. Well, don't they have depressions in Brazil? And no matter how bad it gets, is it going to be a recession? All right, if 50 people are starving to death out of every 100, is it still just a recession? And what triggers all this is, will the government admit the truth? Will any government admit when we are really in a depression? Or are we destined to live forever in either a recession or a recovery or a near recovery or maybe just a stagnant economy? But never a depression. Never, never, never will we go into depressions. I don't know. Is it so politically incorrect to talk about depressions right now, Melody, that we will never be admitted to, it will never be admitted that we're in one again?
Never.
Never?
Never.
No, that's good.
And rarely are we ever in that recession.
Well, that's exactly right.
I was talked yesterday on the program, and I'm going to get it in our newsletter for Monday, and it talks about how the recessions have gone back, and the only way they so-called brought us out of those recessions was just by creating more debt. That's what made the stock markets go up. That's what really made the economy. It was all of our recessions we came out of by creating more and more debt. And so everything that we see wasn't prosperity, wasn't working hard. It wasn't, you know, what you talk about, you know, productivity or anything. It was debt that brought us out of these recessions. So we never really came out of the recession since, you know, 1987. And so we have these bubbles, we have these debt bubbles. And so, but they'll tell us that we go through these little cycles, and if we have to change the way we determine what a recession is, we will. You know, so
yeah, I know that's the problem. They will fix the numbers.
They will
doesn't
fix
matter.
The numbers.
I know you don't have a home and you don't have any food, but you're not in a depression. Look,
well,
we just created 242,000 jobs, but we have less hours being worked at lower wages. But it's all new math. See, with the new math, this is the sort of thing we learned, or my generation didn't learn it, but subsequent generations allegedly have. It's not important whether you get the numbers to add up correctly. It's just important that you feel good about yourself after you've done your addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. That's what new math is all about. It's about feeling good. Well, that's what they've given us. We have a feel-good economy where the government falsifies numbers to tell us it's time to put on a happy face, and you just have to wonder, how long can that possibly last? How long is it going to be before we find out what the real numbers are? And maybe we won't. Government is betting that they can falsify the numbers when they're bad. The real numbers are bad, we'll falsify and make them look a lot better. We'll put on a happy face, and if enough of us put on a happy face, then presto change-o, the economy, people got to buy things, people produce things, and the economy will be stimulated back into prosperity. Well, who knows? Maybe they could do that. Maybe they can do that. Maybe it'll work. And if it does, we will never know how bad the numbers were when they were falsifying numbers and giving us happy talk instead of objective reality. It could work to stimulate it. Theoretically, it's possible. But you look at it and you think to yourself, sooner or later, the truth has to come out. Sooner or later, somebody's got to say, look, actually, we didn't create any. We said we created 242,000 jobs, but actually, we were kind of fibbing. Actually, we lost 20,000 is what really happened. But, you know, we have to maintain morale. We have to teach people. We have to teach people to consume lies. We will produce lies, and the people will consume lies, and we will all live happily ever after on a diet and an economy based on lies. And I look at it and I think, look, I don't know when, but I can't believe this can continue to work. Sooner or later, truth's coming out. Sooner or later, somebody's going to have to face the truth. And when it does, what's going to happen? A lot of people are going to be shocked. Here's something that's a little bit along those lines. This is an article from Michael Pinto entitled China's Newest Export, Empty Buildings. And he says, in part, he says a little over 6 months ago, the owners of Bahia Mar, a $3.5 billion Bahamian resort, filed for bankruptcy. Shoddy construction from the China State Construction Company led to delays resulting from leaking plumbing, porous Chinese concrete, and large cracks at critical stress points. The doomed project even led to the death of two Chinese workers. Although the building is 97% complete, the structural deficiencies make it uninhabitable. China built a $3.5 billion resort in the Bahamas, which is uninhabitable before it's even been completed and open for business. The Bahamian Bahia Mar can now join the Hall of Shame of Chinese exports that include cancer-causing laminate flooring, noxious drywall, and exploding hoverboards, just to name a few. Now, the story is consistent with warnings and observations I've advanced on this program several times in the past. You can't trust dishonest people. or dishonest cultures. If you're going to do business with people you know lie, you're going to probably come to regret it. I've told you about Donna, a woman I met. I actually never met Donna. She lives in Florida. I'm in Texas. Never met her other than to talk to her on the internet or whatever. But she lived in China. Got to talking to her. She lived in China for a year at one point. And her guide, she had a guide with her all the time. It was the Chinese government insisted she have a guide. So she did whenever she went out. And the guide would never take her to some of the local restaurants. And Donna wanted to know why. And eventually the guide gave her a number of different reasons. But Donna knew she was being fooled. And eventually she just set the guide down. She said, "Now tell me the truth. Why won't you take me to the restaurant that's just down the street from where I live?" And the guide said, "Well, it's because we know you Westerners keep dogs and cats as pets. And they serve dog and cat in that restaurant. And we didn't want to take you into that restaurant where you would see that. All right? We're trying to protect you from seeing that aspect of the Chinese culture." Well, the point to this is that Donna learned that the Chinese culture, they want harmony. It's a fundamental goal. All right? They're not looking for fairness. They're not looking for justice. They're looking for harmony. Everybody is singing Kumbaya, all right, at the same time in the same key. Got harmony going here. Right? And they are more than willing. And that's just, I mean, it's not an occasional thing. They are essentially taught to lie whenever necessary to maintain harmony. You don't want to burst the next guy's bubble, so you tell him some lies. Even if you know they're false, doesn't matter. Tell them lies. Well, I've used the story a bunch of times and mentioned her several times at least and said, "Look, I don't want to ride in an airplane built by a Chinese corporation where the guy who fastened the wings to the fuselage of the airplane, he is willing to lie about the numbers he used when he torqued the bolts down that held the wings to the fuselage. I want those things torqued whether we have harmony or we don't have harmony. I want the bolts torqued to specifications." And the Chinese culture is not conducive to that. And I argued for a number of times that this is because they embrace lying as a means of maintaining harmony. Well, to some degree, those stories, when I've passed it out, in fact, they are consistent with this $3.5 billion Bahamian resort that was essentially, it's built by the China State Construction Company, and the whole thing is a farce. You can't even inhabit it. $3.5 billion. Have you ever heard of such a thing? This is the consequence of a culture that embraces lying as a means of maintaining harmony. Or at least that's my take on it. And what I've said, so I bring it to your attention just to essentially say, look, in the past I've advanced what was sort of a theory, and now we have a certain amount of evidence, not proof, but evidence to support that the theory was correct. You can't rely on people who lie to do what they say they're going to do. And if you do rely on them, you're probably going to be surprised and perhaps even injured. So China's got a problem, and it's not just a problem in terms of building a restaurant or a resort in the Bahamas. This is a fundamental problem for the whole Chinese economy. Lies are rampant and accepted as part of the culture. From my perspective, if I see a nation where lying is part of the culture, I'm not going to invest in that nation. And even though the nation is allegedly increasing, its GDP is going up by 10% a year or whatever, which China was allegedly doing for a while, even if that seems to be happening, I'm not going there. All right? And I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm just saying this is goofy. This is goofy. You cannot continue to lie in a technological society. You got to tell the truth, or the wing is going to fall off the plane, or the resort in the Bahamas is going to turn out to be uninhabitable.
Is this country much different? Maybe not to the same degree, But look at GM lying about the little part that they could have replaced, and look how many deaths there were, and the millions of lawsuits. I mean, we can go on and on about the inequality that they lie here. They lie to us about our numbers. They lie to us about everything.
I understand, but
then maybe it's not all the people.
Other than the national culture of the United States. There is at least some semblance, and I'm not saying we don't lie. I'm certainly not saying that. But there is some semblance of a reluctance to lie, of you know, if you're going to tell lies, we're going to ban you and throw you out or get rid of you or whatever. We are kind of reluctant to lie. We don't celebrate lying, at least most of us don't, but they might at the corporate level. But again, example at General Motors proves my point. If you're going to tell lies, guess what? It's going to come back to get you. Say, no, we'll tell lies and we can fool people and we can make an extra $100 million. All right, so let's lie. And then it turns out the lies are exposed.
Do you know what, Al?
Lose a half a half
Do you know why? Do you know why they're allowed to lie? Because these lies are accepted. Yeah. And it's almost, hey, I can remember growing up as a little child, you used to say, well, politicians lie. Everybody giggles. Everybody accepts it. So, hey, if a liar is allowed to lie, what's he going to do? Lie.
He's going
to lie more and more.
It's not true that it's just accepted.
We accept it.
Have to pay fines and penalties in court. It was not ultimately accepted.
We accepted
penalty to be paid if you're telling lies, and it caught up with GM and it's catching up with China, and it'll catch up with everyone else insofar as we tell lies. And there's a lesson here. Got to stick to the truth. Got to start to embrace the truth and say, yay, let's tell the truth. Let's respect people who tell the truth.
All of that product that was shipped over here from China, all the inferior, the product, from the drywall to dog food, our people died, dogs died. But why? Because you have businessmen here who were building homes. They wanted to make as much money as they could. They're greedy as possible, and they accept the shoddy work. They accept the inferior quality of these products.
It came back to bite them in the butt in the end.
People started getting sick. They were exposed to it. They had to.
That's my point. Eventually, that is my point. It's my contention. It's my belief. I'm sitting here. We're looking at what's happening in the world, and I'm saying that sooner or later, the lies and fiat currency is one of them.
I'm not arguing with you. Just showing my point.
Well, you sound like you're arguing with me, Melody.
No, I am
not. I thought you've been through this before.
It's just because you're right. And the thing about gold is there's no debt against gold. You can't lie about gold.
Well, either how much gold you got? It's not a piece of paper. It's ounces. Put them on a scale and find out how much gold you got. All right? That's what it is. It's not a piece of paper. It's not ETF and rest. It's certainly truth, 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 truth. I think it pays. We're out of time. I hope we made a little sense, at least in part of the program today. Thank you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
Money, money, must be funny.